Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. It is the KRFY Morning Show right here on 88.5 Panhandle Community Radio with Jack and Diane up here on a beautiful Thursday, June 4th in Sandpoint, Idaho. There is a little, before we get into our conversation today, actually we have a couple interviews coming up, but I'll give you a little rundown of the weather and a look ahead to the weekend. There's a little 30% chance of showers today with a high near 69, so it's not quite back to full strength yet, but looking into the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, through Monday, highs in the 80s, actually. 79 is the high tomorrow. Saturday, 84. Sunday, 87. Monday, 89, according to the National Weather Service. Sunny all the way through, mostly clear in the evening. Should be a pretty gorgeous weekend here in early June. And actually, I believe school's out. Maybe one of our, maybe somebody here can check me on that. Is this the last week of school? I think it is.
I think this is the last week of school. Clark Fort graduated last night, and I think, there's two more graduations to go. I'm not sure which is which comes first, the high school or the alternative school.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's the end. So this is going to be quite a kickoff to summer for the school kids out there.
They're looking forward to it.
Hot weekend. I imagine the beach will see some activity this weekend. Today in the studio here in the Tiki Room in our downtown Sandpoint World headquarters, we have Amber Snoddy and Catherine Peruse from NAMI Far North. Amber is the president and Catherine a past president. Good morning, Amber and Catherine.
Good morning.
And how are you today?
Doing well.
Good. That's Amber. Catherine, you're doing well as well.
It's a wonderful day.
Yeah. It is a nice day outside, weather-wise anyway. First, what is NAMI Far North? That's my first question for Amber.
Okay. NAMI Far North. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And NAMI Far North is the affiliate in Bonner and Boundary Counties.
NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Yes.
So this is it's a local organization affiliated with, obviously, a national organization. How mm-hmm. long has NAMI Far North been around?
I think since 2006.
Yeah. The national organization goes back further than that?
Quite a bit further.
Quite a bit further.
Mm-hmm. It's been around several decades.
Yeah. Were you guys involved in the actual founding of the Far North?
Far North, no, neither one of us were. There were two original founding members, Ann Wimberly and Ruth, or three, I guess. Ruth and Doug McKnight were primary in founding our affiliate.
Well, how did you two get involved with NAMI Far North?
Well, NAMI is a grassroots organization of family members and individuals who experience mental illness. And we seek to make changes within our communities to provide services, reduce stigma. And I think most of us became involved. I personally became involved because I have several children who suffer from depression. And I'm also a mental health therapist. And so individuals who experience mental illness are near and dear to my heart. And I see a lot of stigma and prejudice that they experience and not being able to access services and a lot of different things. So I wanted to help make a difference.
Mm-hmm. So what does the organization cover? Any sort of mental illness? And what do you do about it? Go ahead, Amber.
We have many signature programs that promote... mostly we provide education for the community.
Mm-hmm.
We have some signature programs. One of them is Family to Family, and it's organized by the national affiliate, so it's really a high-quality program. And it's a 12-week program for family members. 12 weeks for family members who have family members that with mental illness, and it helps them understand all phases of mental illness. And it's a wonderful program. We try to produce it twice a year, once in Bonner County and once in Boundary County. Another program that we have is our In Our Own Voice program, where we have one of our one or more of our members do a presentation to the public on their stories in their own voice of what mental illness is and how it affects them individually and as a family and the community. And what else do we do?
We have worked with law enforcement to implement CIT, which is crisis intervention training, to help increase the awareness of law enforcement on how to handle individuals who might be in a mental health crisis. We are currently working on a pilot project that we're just starting up, which will be a crisis line here locally. There are very few services available to individuals who might be having a mental health crisis. And this will be a 24/7, well, it'll 24/7, all night long, all weekend, mm-hmm. providing mental health professionals who can provide supportive talk on the phone, offer resources, something besides just calling law enforcement.
Yeah.
You don't always need law enforcement, but it's your only option right now in the far northern counties.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a undertaking, getting that a 24-hour hotline, which would be really neat. I mean, neat is one word for it, I guess. That would be really
needed
is right. How's that going?
We're just getting it going. We hope our goal is to have it online and up and running after hours on weekends by 1 January.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of infrastructure to set up to make that happen. We're working with other community agencies in the area to partner because this really is a community problem.
Mm-hmm.
And being, you know, everybody coming together is what's going to make it successful.
Mm-hmm. There is, it is really a community problem, as you said, or a community issue anyway. The National Alliance for Mental Illness and NAMI Far North, you guys are focused on mental illness does have sort of a stigma around it, even more so than physical illness or physical disability or anything.
It's very true because it's invisible.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's not that evidence in front of your face that, oh, this person has a disability. Quite often it's, you know, people will say, well, they're just goofing off or they're malingering or they're, you know, they could just pull themselves up by their bootstraps and move on, get a grip.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case when you are experiencing a mental health issue.
Do you see in this area, do you think there is a higher, lower average amount of mental illness or anything like that? Do you see it?
I think it's probably average with the nation.
Yeah.
Statistics say that 1 in 4 individuals in the United States will experience a mental health diagnosis within their lifetime. And it is possible to have a diagnosis and recover.
Mm-hmm.
And then that diagnosis is no longer applicable.
Hmm.
So you can become depressed if there's a situational event that can throw you into clinical depression. You can be there for any number of months or even years, but then you can recover.
Mm-hmm.
And recovery is the focus of most of what NAMI does, is helping individuals find their way to their form of recovery.
Who do you see at your meetings, and when do you meet?
We meet the third Wednesday of every month, except December.
Is it a meeting of mostly people like you're a professional in the field?
I am. I'm a professional and I'm a family member.
Uh-huh.
And it's family members, it's professionals, it's individuals who have a mental health diagnosis. The first hour of our general meeting is usually educational of some form. So we have people come in on specific and speak on specific diagnosis or different methods to use in recovery, such as mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
We usually have an In Our Own Voice presentation at least once a year. We have suicide prevention trainings once a year for that first hour. Then the second hour to hour and a half are two different support groups, one for family members with a trained facilitator, and then one for individuals who are experiencing a mental health diagnosis. And that, again, is run by a peer, an individual with a mental health diagnosis who's been trained.
Oh.
They're very popular.
Uh-huh.
And it's a wonderful place to go when things are not going well.
Yeah.
It's nice to come and hear other people's stories or support. Because you can feel really alone, whether you're that individual with the mental health diagnosis or you're their parent or sister or spouse. It can be very lonely. It's not something you go to work and talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if somebody broke their leg, you go and say, oh, this has been so bad. You
right.
know, it's pins. And you don't, that's not acceptable.
No, you don't. Yeah, you don't get the same kind of reaction as a physical. Yes.
Not at all.
So what's coming up for us here? Amber, what's on the immediate agenda?
Do you have events yes. coming well, up? The yeah. immediate agenda is our Take a Seat at the Table with NAMI Far North. And it's our, we do this every other year, and it's to raise funds for our mission. And it will be at the community center at the Columbia Bank, and it will be at 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock on June 12th. I mean, 6 to probably about 9 or 10. And one of the really unique things that we do is that we get repurposed chairs from wherever, and we have local artists decorate those chairs, and they are really art collectible pieces. And then we auction them off. Jojo Baker will be our auctioneer, and it's a really fun, exciting night.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to also have live music.
Ooh, who's playing that night?
We are going to have Owen and McCoy.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
They're a talented local young mm-hmm. group.
Yeah.
Every other year, this is not even an annual event.
No.
This is really something special. Is the chairs thing, is that a new idea, or has that been going on
before? No, we've been doing this. I think we decided this was our fourth year,
mm-hmm.
our fourth mm-hmm. Event that we've had like this, and we've been very successful. And it is our major source of funding,
mm-hmm.
other than writing grants. So we hope the community will chime in and help us.
It's a wonderfully fun night, and you get a wonderful dinner provided by Tango. So your mm-hmm. admission ticket is just, it encompasses everything.
Mm-hmm.
The fun of meeting all the artists that do the chairs, because they all usually come too. Seeing the chairs, knowing that you're helping a community event that will benefit the community, and you get a wonderful dinner on top of it.
Yes, and it is a plated dinner, and so there are choices. And that's why we need people to buy tickets early, so that we can have the dinners arranged for what they choose.
Mm-hmm.
And so people that show up at the door at the time might not get in, because last time we had a sellout, and we expect that again this year.
Good.
Yeah, good indeed. Let's see. Diane, were you going to ask something about the
chair?
Well,
I was going to say that years ago, the library raised money with a chair auction. Uh-huh. And you just can't imagine what an artist can do with a chair.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's great fun. And if you happen to be an artist who has a chair in the auction, you really want to see what other people do and how people react to your chair. So mm-hmm. I know that they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, it really is. We had an amazing chair last year from the alternative school that the students helped create. And they're doing another one this year. So I'm really anxious to see what it's going to look like, because it was just amazing.
Mm-hmm. These chairs come from, like, they come from thrift stores or something?
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah, people donate them.
Uh-huh. Garages.
Right, yeah.
Cool. Well, this is an interesting topic to discuss, especially because it's hard to, you don't want to be specific about any individuals out there and talk about, you know, what any particular person has experienced or necessarily how you've helped any individual, but broadly, I think you, do you feel like you've had an impact over these last 10 years or so?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We've mm-hmm. had family members who have expressed that they didn't know how they would have gotten through the first several years of a diagnosis of their loved one without the support that they were able to find at mm-hmm. NAMI. I know it's been incredibly helpful to me because I know that if one of my children is having a really difficult time, that I have a whole wealth of people that I can call and they'll listen, they understand, there's no judgment. Because it's not something that I can talk with to a lot of my friends. They don't understand. And I know for me, it's been incredibly supportful.
Who out there in our listening audience, who do you think should attend your meetings? Not just your fun event coming up, but who can we...
Anyone who is interested in mental health, has had experience with it, whether it's a family member... We have one lady that has come and it's her best friend who has a mental health diagnosis, and it just kind of helps give her that insight, helps her keep focused on coping with this person she loves very dearly. But it can be very difficult at times. Professionals, I love it when we have more professionals there because it gives you, feet on the street to see what people are really experiencing. And then, of course, individuals who have a mental health diagnosis to meet with other individuals and feel the support and the knowledge that they share with each other has proven to be very helpful.
And also people that work with families that have mental illness. I'm also a volunteer for the CASA program, and quite often the CASA volunteers will come and hear our speakers. This month, we're going to have Dr. Bergstaller, and he's going to be talking about, I hope, sleep disorders, and as well as how medications and treatment is provided in the skilled nursing facilities. So anybody that's interested in that can come to our general meeting at 6 o'clock at the Bonner General Hospital classroom on the third Wednesday of this month.
Is that where they usually are?
That's where they always are, yeah.
Third Wednesday of the month and 6 o'clock in the Bonner General Hospital meeting room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to tell you a personal vignette. I have a very good friend who's moved away, but used to live in Clark Fork, who suffered depression. And because I didn't know any better, I thought, well, it's silly. She's not washed her dishes for a week. And just get up and wash your dishes. And I happened to say something to someone, to another friend of mine, and we were mutual friends of this person. And he also suffers depression. And he sat me down and explained what it felt like and why she couldn't wash her dishes. Mm-hmm. And something that he said turned that light on. But not everybody has that opportunity. And so that's one of the things you would gain by coming to the meeting is understanding that it's not they're just staying in bed because they like it there.
Right.
They're mm-hmm. staying in bed because they can't get out. Mm-hmm. And literally. I hadn't realized that. So I appreciate Ken's help to this day.
Well, and it helps reduce stigma to meet people who openly mm-hmm. say, yes, I have a mental health diagnosis, but I am still me. I am still a valuable person. I am still a contributing member of the community. You're not going to meet that in everyday life.
No. And like you say, it's not like the broken bone that you go and talk about at work. Very few people say, wow, did I have a down weekend?
Right.
maybe they should. Maybe as we learn more, as we become more understanding,
we'll be able to say
people should be more open.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. I'd also like to mention our Conduit of Care program. This is one of the three programs that'll be funded by this fundraiser that we're having. Conduit of Care is for many people that are hospitalized in State Hospital North in Orofino, and it's our closest psychiatric hospital. It has 55 beds, and it provides treatments for adults in psychiatric crisis. Their average length of stay is about 70 days. Many people arrive at Sacred Heart North, or I mean Sacred Heart, State Hospital North, without personal belongings, family, or financial support. Giving care and comfort to those patients provides hope and support for recovery and eases their transition back into the communities and discharge. So some of the things that we'll be doing for them is providing them personal items that will make their stay more comfortable and make their transition back home comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Is it the do these people in the what was it called, the state hospital, that's do they have family members, or do you work with family members or anything in this conduit of care program, or is this people who don't have a line, otherwise line?
It can be either way. With people with family members, people without. Even if someone has a family member, they might not be speaking. That's not uncommon. When an individual goes to the hospital, if it's an involuntary, they can lose everything from their home because they're not there. Nobody's paying the rent unless they have family members who are willing to come and move them out of their apartment. All that stuff is given away. So when someone gets out of the hospital, it's not uncommon for them to have the clothes on their back.
If they weren't depressed first, they will be now.
Absolutely. And overwhelmed and trying to get all their services back in place from when leaving the hospital and finding a place to live and a bed to sleep on and blankets. So these packages work to provide things. We had a church that made quilts, a number of quilts, and I can't remember how many, that were sent down. So everybody had this beautiful handmade quilt that indicated that somebody cared. Real basic things like toothbrushes, nice tasting toothpaste. just the things we all take for granted.
Right.
That you don't have to use the icky, cheap, nasty tasting toothpaste. You can have real toothpaste. Socks. The basics that we all take for granted. These packages help to provide.
This is an interesting topic. The state hospital. I mean, I'm not familiar with what in this day and age what the state hospital is used for. And you can still be committed involuntarily to.
You can
to the state hospital.
Yes, if you are in danger to yourself or someone else, or it's proven that you cannot care for yourself. That is an would require an involuntary hospitalization.
Yeah.
And that's when someone's truly experiencing an intense crisis where they are just incredibly unstable. And it takes a very controlled environment to help them regain that stability.
And now some of these, I mean, with the conduit of care, people are now coming out of the hospital, out of that intense supportive environment or structured environment anyway. And is there beyond what you guys are doing, is it just you're cured, you're back in society now, or
no? State hospital works hard to coordinate with agencies who provide services, family members, when someone is released, so that they're not just set out on the curb. That is the goal of every individual that's released. Sometimes it works better than others. But that is the goal, to provide as much support as possible. But it's still a tremendous transition to go from a facility where, you know, everything is controlled, it's safe, it's calm, it's out into our world.
Understandable.
Right. Which can sometimes be very unsafe and uncontrolled. So there's a lot of agencies, a lot of really good therapists, agencies that provide other services that work real hard to make sure that it goes as smoothly as possible, but it's still a transition and it's a difficult one.
Yeah. One of those agencies, of course, is yours, the NAMI Far North with the Conduit of Care Program. And you can support that. People listening right now can support that by going to your event, which is the details on that one more time are what's the what's it called? Take a seat at a table.
Take the seat at the table, and it's June 12th, and tickets are available at our local merchants, Pedro's, Finn and McDonald's,
Eve's Leaves,
and also online at Eventbrite.
Eventbrite.com.
Okay. Yep. You can go there and search on NAMI Far North, if you want, or take a seat.
If you want to use your credit card, you can go to Eventbrite.com.
Okay.
And just look for take a seat, or just plug in Sandpoint, Idaho events, and it'll pop up.
And it's, you said 6 to 8, 9, 10 on...
It's 6 to 10 in the Community Bank Atrium Room.
On the 12th, coming up. Yep. What, next weekend?
That's right.
Yeah.
Next Friday.
Well, it does sound like fun and interesting. I mean, not just a fun event, but I'm sure there will be... the live music sounds like fun, but just the topic that we're discussing right now, it'll be an interesting event. Good to support for folks to get out if you're looking for something to do on a Friday night. Go buy a chair.
After you've made your pledge to KRFY.
Yes.
It's our pledge weekend.
That is, yeah, next weekend is KRFY's pledge drive weekend as well. But these are not mutually exclusive. You can do, no reason not to do both, I don't think.
I agree.
Well, we are running short on time. We have another guest waiting in the wings. Did we cover all the important details this morning? Is there anything you guys want to make sure to say before we get off the air?
No.
No?
Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you for coming in, Amber. Well, thank you, Catherine.
Jack, can we have them let us know when you have the 24-hour helpline up?
I will.
And we'd like to interview you again.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
We would love that.
And we can talk about that.
We'd love to keep the community apprised of how it's moving forward.
Great.
Yes. Yes, please. Keep us in the loop. And thank you both for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome.
I have a little quiz, a little musical quiz for anyone who's listening. It was on this date in 1984 that what happened? What album was released on this date in 1984, which went on to become the biggest selling album of 1985? Can either of you two say? I know you're still in the room.
Not a clue.
It was an album by Bruce Springsteen. There's your clue.
Born in the USA.
There we go.
Born in the USA. Correct. Born in the USA was released on this date in 1984, which did become the best-selling album of 1985 and also his most commercially successful album ever. It produced a record-tying string of 7 top 10 singles off of one record, which is tied with Michael Jackson's Thriller and Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation, 1814. But Bruce Springsteen's Born in the USA came out this day in 1984, 31 years ago, and one of those top 10 singles, none of which went to number one, actually. The highest was number 2, Dancing in the Dark, but this is one of the top 10 singles from 1984's Born in the USA, released on this date 31 years ago. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY, The Morning Show, back with Bill Percy, local author, after this.
It's the KRFY Membership Drive coming up on June the 12th and 13th. We're going to be broadcasting live each day from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., broadcasting live, that's right, from the former Coldwater Creek storefront at 311 First Avenue in downtown Sandpoint. Everyone's invited to stop by and meet all the fun people from KRFY, listen to live local music, and join in all the festivities. This is a perfect time to become a new member or renew your membership. That's KRFY Membership Drive, June the 12th and 13th. We're going to be broadcasting live 9 to 9 each day. We'll see you there.
Yeah. We are back. You're listening to the KRFY Morning Show with Jack and Diane in the studio. Thanks to Catherine and Amber from NAMI Far North for coming in. And now, across from me at the table, is local author Bill Percy. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Jack.
How
good
are
morning,
you?
Bill.
I'm well. I'm very well. Thank you.
So you have written a book, and when did this book come out? Climbing the Colosseum.
Climbing the Colosseum. Well, it was published in 2014, so a year ago, actually June 4th, 2014.
So well, 1 year ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's been in the process of being written since 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So it went through about 9 drafts. And
that's grueling.
Well, it just shows the level of my talent. It takes an awful lot of hard work to squeeze out something good.
The book is called Climbing the Colosseum, and it's available around town, I'm sure. I've seen the cover, and actually it's a new cover. Is this a second edition?
Yes.
Or yeah.
Well, it's a new cover. I've been working with Kiyoki to try to find better ways to market it. And one of the first things they suggested was that the original cover was very nice, but probably not as attention-getting on the shelves as it should be. So we redesigned, my nephew actually redesigned the cover. I think it's hot.
Yeah.
It is.
He's talented. It is attention getting. It does look, I don't know. It's got a good look about it.
Yeah.
The book is self-published, correct?
Yes. Independently published.
Yeah.
We call it, it used to be called the Vanity Press approach. Uh-huh. Now we call it independent publishing.
Uh-huh. That sounds much better.
Better. And, you know, I'm 67 years old, and I was doing some research and found out that the average time from writing a draft to getting an agent is about 10 and a half years.
Mm.
And the average time from getting an agent to getting a publisher is another couple of years. So I figured, you know, I don't really have that much time.
Yeah.
So I thought independent publishing would be the way to go, and it's been fun.
Yeah. Well, that's a huge number.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I totally understand
that. That's what I thought when I first read it.
Yeah. You say it has been fun. Has it been a rewarding experience for mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. doing the independent
yes,
publishing?
Yes, absolutely. It's. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been writing all my career. I'm a psychologist,
mm-hmm.
and my writing was always professional, training mm-hmm. manuals and things like that. So to be able to write fiction and to tell stories about people that I've kind of built up over the years in my clinical practice has just been very rewarding and fun, a lot of fun. And I guess it's pretty good. It's a finalist for the Book of the Year Award from Forward Reviews, so I'm looking forward to the end of June to find out whether or not it's a winner or just a finalist.
Oh, being a finalist is not to
yeah.
be.
Yeah, not to be seized
at.
Yeah. No, yeah. Right.
The book is so far. I'm not all the way into it. As we said, Diane has read the whole thing. I'm just starting out, but it is very good. It's very engrossing and doesn't. You say, yeah, the old term being vanity press sort of implies that this is just something mm-hmm. that you'd be interested mm-hmm. in, but nobody else would be.
Boring.
But this is certainly not finding it to be that at all. This is
good.
Yeah,
good.
It's a well written and very so far very very interesting and engrossing.
And Jack, you'll be sorry when it's over because it never loses that that motion.
Mm.
But wait, there's more.
Right.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, it does say on the back of my copy, it says it's part of a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have in mind.
Yeah, there's a second. Actually, I sent the manuscript of the second book to my editor yesterday.
Yay.
Yeah. Same characters, same setting. It's set in a fictitious valley in southwestern Montana. I don't know what it's based on exactly, just a place that I love And I really kind of fell in love with the characters as I lived with them for 4 or 5 years. So I just couldn't put it down and say, well, I'll go on to some other story now. So the next one is going to come out, I hope, somewhere toward the end of the year, early next year. And then the third one is in a draft, but it's got a lot of long way to go. So
The book is... Well, the main character is Ed Northrup, psychologist Ed Northrup,
mm-hmm.
who comes from the Midwest and moves out west.
Yes.
This mirrors certain biographical details of the author. Is it autobiographical, would you say?
Well, Ed Northrup is a depressed psychologist, and so no, it's not autobiographical at all. It has nothing to do with me. Well, certainly, you know, I'm a psychologist, Ed's a psychologist, so there are a lot of things that I know and the way I practice psychology that came out in the book. I didn't write it, and I don't think it's really autobiographical. Mm. I didn't come from Minnesota to Idaho because of tragedy back in Minnesota.
Right.
Ed did.
Uh-huh.
He came to escape. And that's really part of the story of the book is the reason he's depressed is that he's never really faced his own demons. And as a result, the book starts out with him almost committing suicide, but not being able to because he's afraid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He really does want to live. He just doesn't know it. Mm. You know, I think it's in the New Testament, someone says, physician, heal thyself.
Yes.
Well, psychologist, heal thyself is an important thing. For many years, I was a consultant to other therapists, and we tend to put our own problems on the back burner. It was wonderful to listen to your interview previously with the folks from NAMI, because it's, you know, even the professionals become mentally ill, oftentimes more because they're struggling so much with the things that they hear. And it's been a real freeing experience for me to write about Ed Northrup because I can write about stories that you can't talk about with people. Nobody in the book is a character that comes out of my practice. They're composites or they're, you know.
They're blending.
They're blendings, right. But it frees me to be able to. I said things as Ed Northrup that I would never have said to real clients. But he lives in Montana and he can get away with it.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm going to scramble home and get my Kindle and reread it. I liked Ed, but I fell totally in love with Grace.
Grace, 14-year-old. Mm. Part of the story is that, in fact, Grace is, I didn't choose her name because of Grace, you know, the noun Grace, but she becomes Grace for Ed. She's abandoned in the valley. Her mother disappears. Her mother turns out to be Ed's ex-wife. Her mother disappears and leaves her with Ed. And there's a lot of reasons for that that come out later in the book. But she's this angry kid who's been neglected her whole life. And suddenly she's left alone in a place with no one that she knows.
And that's totally foreign, too.
Totally foreign. She's a Minneapolis
where she's lived,
kid.
Yeah, right.
And the valley is very small. There's very few people living in it, a small town. A lot of ranches. So Grace she's a wonderful character.
And she is a survivor.
She is a survivor, isn't she?
Yeah, I like that because I wasn't sure.
Mm-hmm. When I started writing it, I wasn't sure either.
Oh, that's neat. So you didn't know how it was going to end when you started?
No. Actually, it started as a short story. And I had written about 30 short stories and hated every one of them. But this one I really liked, so I put it away for a couple of months and came back and still liked it. And then I realized this is way too big for a short story.
Mm-hmm.
So I did turn it into a novel. And then my editor said it's way too big for a novel. Mm-hmm. So I had to take about half of it out. That's going to be the second book.
Well, and maybe you could talk a little bit about the title, Climbing the Colosseum.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of the Roman Colosseum.
Yes, right. Right.
But in actuality, it's a rock outcropping.
It's a glacial cirque.
Perhaps reminded people of the Colosseum.
Yeah. In the valley, the Colosseum is a glacial cirque and a hanging valley at the end of the big valley.
Ah.
And the people call it the Colosseum because it looks like the Roman
Colosseum. So it is a real place.
No, it's a fictitious place.
But that works.
Yeah, yeah.
You convinced me, you see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Before we get too much further, what you can tell us about the story of the book, without giving away the ending or anything. What's the story here?
Well, as I said before, it starts out with Ed climbing the Colosseum on an outing that many people did. It's a trail and they go up, and he was going because he is so depressed. He thought maybe if he could get up there, he would, and realizes as he's climbing, that he's really going up to commit suicide. He's going to jump off. But when he gets to the top, he can't do it for a pretty exciting reason. And so he comes back down now, not only depressed, but feeling kind of defeated because he couldn't even commit suicide, kind of thing. And he decides, well, I've got to do something, but he realizes, I haven't done anything for 27 years. I'm not going to do it now, probably. The story then takes off when he's confronted when he returns to work with a couple of important mysteries. Somebody's hanging racist, hate-filled posters in town, and this girl gets dumped in his office. So he has to help find out, where is the mother? Where did she go? What's going on? And the suspicion is that it's the husband of one of his clients is hanging these posters. And so that brings him together with Deputy Andy Pelton, who is a newcomer to the Valley. She's a female deputy sheriff from Cook County, Chicago. And she came to the Valley for her reasons, which are part of the backstory too. They begin working together to figure out who's hanging these posters, but also to find out where is the mother of Grace. And as they work together, their relationship deepens, and they solve these mysteries together. And it's pretty painful because there's a lot of trouble that's going on around all these things that are happening. I won't give much more away than that, but they do solve it eventually. But there's quite a bit of drama. There's a near death in a blizzard. There's the tax evasion scheme that's going on, a conspiracy that's happening in town that no one knows about until the investigation uncovers it. There's a shooting when the police, the sheriff's department, tries to intervene. So there's plenty of drama. But there's also the story of how all these people working together are also working out, without even saying it, they're working out their own internal psychological and spiritual problems. So that's a summary without giving too much away, I hope.
I like, as I said, I haven't gotten all the way through it yet, so I might be talking out of my ear, but I like that so far there is sort of a, you do have the trappings of a mystery or a psychological thriller, mm-hmm. sort of, to pull you into it, but without the, it's not the traditional
right.
violent kind of a, right. kind of a, you know, a hard-boiled or modern day thriller mm-hmm. that you read about. It's yeah. it's a different kind of a story that still has that imperative to keep reading. It's
well, know, that was what I was hoping for. Was I didn't want to write a thriller, you know, like
it's a soft detective story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Quercus Reviews is a professional review company, and they did a review of it, and they called it a light, breezy thriller, which surprised me because I hadn't thought of it as a thriller.
I don't know that light or breezy works either, really.
Yeah.
I found it fascinating and certainly held my attention.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it was enjoyable reading, but not all the subject matter was enjoyable. But yeah. life isn't always
enjoyable
subject matter.
That's true.
Oh, sorry.
No,
from Kirkus Reviews, a light, breezy thriller, but its tale of a troubled man acting as a father to an equally troubled girl has exceptional emotional impact.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Although I agree with you, I didn't know about light and breezy. But
no, yeah. those wouldn't have been choices.
But it sure is not a thriller in the way that we usually think of thrillers.
No.
But the thing I discovered I practiced psychotherapy for 40 years. And one of the things I discovered that is universal in people's lives is that their stories, when you get inside them, are very dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're very boring on the surface. But what's going on inside people is very dramatic. And sometimes their actual behavior becomes very dramatic. I mean, we see that in the news all the time.
Hmm.
But people that do dramatic things are pretty ordinary people. But they're facing something very challenging that we may not know about. So that's what I was trying to get at in writing the story itself.
I think you did a magnificent job of that.
Thank you.
We were talking a little bit about the publishing of it. Mm-hmm. Diane came in here not even knowing who our second interview guest was, and turns out she had already read the book.
I knew who the guest was. I just hadn't put two and two together.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
But you read it on your Kindle on an e-edition.
Yes.
So that's...
And 3 months ago.
Yeah. Is that just as pure trivia interest? Is that do you see a lot of sales now on the internet as well, or on the electronic edition? Electronic.
About a third of the sales are electronic.
Yeah.
At least from Amazon. So, yeah.
Cool.
Certainly it's everything I'm reading about the electronic publishing is that it seems to have leveled off in the last year or so. It was really a phenomenon for the last 5 or 6 years. And there was talk at one point that it would take over the publishing world, but it appears to have leveled off in terms of sales. I don't pay much attention to that. That's not my strong suit.
I'll be honest, as a retired librarian, I like the feel of a book in my hand, and a Kindle does not feel like a book. Mm-hmm. But, boy, I went home when I heard about the book and ordered it and had it that day, and was wonderful.
Yep. And for many people, it's a much more affordable option.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you don't want to keep every book you read on your shelf.
I do, but
yeah.
Well, when you look at my house, you'll realize that I do too, but right. Generally speaking.
Right. Is it the same company that published the physical copy also just distributes it online as well?
Yes, right.
And not a concern that you really have to worry about. It just goes.
I send them the manuscript and they take it from there.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, neat.
Yeah.
And now you're working with Keoki a little bit, but it's still it's published by Ex Libris.
Ex Libris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're an Indiana company, although I'm not sure really who owns them, but they're a subsidiary of someone in the publishing world, but they're in Indiana, and the people that I've worked with there have been just really very helpful and very, very supportive.
Can we ask the title of the next one?
Well, you can, but it probably won't be the one that comes out on the book.
Oh, okay.
It's gone through 3 or 4 working titles. At this very moment, it's titled The Third Noble Truth. But that's probably not going to end up being the title.
It hadn't occurred to me that even titles would change. Mm-hmm. That makes sense now that you mention it.
Mm-hmm.
The title of Climbing the Colosseum went through 4 or 5 changes as well. Originally, I just called it Monastery Valley. Not very gripping.
This is much better.
Yeah, right now. But I really wanted to capture the sense of having to go through some struggle to get to some destination that was dramatic.
Mm.
And so I ended up with this. So the Third Noble Truth it refers to the Buddha's 4 Noble Truths, and the third one is that there can be an end to suffering. And that's kind of what the story is about. It's two more people that are suffering from mysterious psychological dilemmas, very serious ones. It was, should I say something about that?
Sure.
The second
Absolutely.
Book, about 2 years ago in northern Minnesota, there was a tip to the police that a teenager, a high school kid, was amassing a weapons collection and was going to do a school shooting. And they went into his storage locker and sure enough found out that was the case. Well, I thought, wow. And this kid was mentally ill, suffering a lot, had been bullied, so he had all those characteristics. But I thought, what if a psychologist was confronted with a case of the same thing, but there was nothing wrong with the kid? That he was a school leader, he was well-liked, he was beloved in the community, he was successful, talented, church-going, all those things. But he had amassed these things, and he was sounding like a terrorist. He was talking like he had to kill people in order to make a political statement. What if that was the case? So that was the beginning of it. And what is this kid suffering from, and can there be an end to that suffering?
Sounds interesting. Sounds like a great read.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, coming out end of this year, you said? Maybe early next year?
I'm shooting for the end of this year, but, you know, things happen.
Sure. The Climbing the Colosseum takes place in a small town in Montana, in this case. Do you take any inspiration from our small community around here?
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing in particular, nothing specific about it. I live in Hope.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't anything specific about HOPE and the people in HOPE except this. People help each other out all the time. And that we've been coming out here since 1991, and we've been living here now for a couple of years full time, and we've been out most of the year for the last 7 or 8 years. And so we've been getting to know people. My wife, Michelle, who's also my best reader, is a social, she just really likes to know people and be with people. And so through her, I've gotten to know, I could probably live in a cave by myself. But people help each other. One Christmas, we arrived from Minneapolis on Christmas Day in the afternoon, and there was no water in our, we couldn't turn the water on. And our neighbor left his Christmas dinner, put a hose from his house to our house so we could have water, and spent the whole evening helping me find out where the leak in the water line was. Christmas Day. I mean, that's, and the people in Jefferson are like that too. Jefferson is the town in climbing the Coliseum, and the people in Jefferson are like that. And I think that was the big inspiration.
You mentioned in your credits, you mentioned thanks to the staff at Sweet Lou's, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that I've been reading through it and trying to find, I was like, is that this particular bar? Is that, that reminds me of Eichardt's for some reason. I wonder if that's where that came from, but.
The bar with Ted, the bartender.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sweet Lou's. There's a philosopher that I studied when I was in college who called himself a cafe philosopher because he did all of his writing and thinking in a cafe. And there's a writer in Minneapolis or St. Paul, William Kent Kruger, who does all his writing in a cafe. And I do a lot of my writing in not a cafe, but a bar. It would be a cafe if there was one around that I could get to easily. But Sweet Lou's was where I did a lot of writing on the manuscript. And everybody there got excited about it. And as soon as it came out, Maggie and Chad and the staff said we should put on a book signing. So we did that. So I wanted to thank them for the support.
I don't know him personally, but I know the William Kent Kruger, being from Minnesota myself. I've seen some of his books, and it seems like there might be a similar story here where he was he is now, I believe, a full-time author.
Right.
I mean, and makes his living that way, but also started out just writing in a cafe. And that wasn't his full-time job at first, and it sort of became that after a few successful books, but they're mostly regionally.
Yes.
They were first regionally successful, and now he's getting a little more notice.
Right.
So this is sort of a, I don't know, it reminds me of the same kind of model, I think.
Well, Jack, we're going to claim him for Idaho, not Minnesota.
Well, obviously. Right. Obviously, Diane. Speaking of claiming him for Idaho, you have an upcoming event, if I'm not mistaken, coming up. Is it this weekend? Or
it's next weekend, the 13th. June 13th at Vanderfurt's, from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock, we'll have a reading and a Q&A, a little talk, and then a book signing, and we'll have all the new covers there, the new cover on the book, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, there you go. Next weekend, you said it's the 13th,
June Saturday. 13th, Saturday, 11 o'clock at Vanderfurt's. Yeah.
You can go and meet Bill Percy, get your book signed, pick up a new copy with the brand spanking new cover, which is a change.
The we color can hold has it up so they completely. Could all see it.
That's right. Hold close to the microphone. the book is called Climbing the Coliseum. It is it is getting excellent reviews. All the reviews that I'm reading, the what do they call them? Push review, pull review? I don't know. Quotes. Push quotes, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what they call them. I'm a rookie at this business, but
it's a great book.
Yeah.
I'll vouch for it.
Yeah.
That's the Diane Newcomer of KRFY. Panhandle Community Radio says it's a great book.
Thank you.
That's the review that I think everyone was waiting for. So that's good.
It's the one that means a lot to me.
Yeah. Bill, thanks for coming in this morning.
It's been a pleasure.
Nice to meet you Well, we'll see you in a couple weeks, next weekend.
Yes, on the
13th at Vanderfurt's.
Wonderful.
Well, let's actually, I don't even think we have time for a musical break because we are almost at the top of the hour. But I know Diane had one thing that you wanted to mention, an upcoming
event. I would like event. To. The PISNY, Panhandle Special Needs, is wanting to burn the mortgage for the adult daycare center. And the adult daycare center serves adults with disability. Our new daycare center is a mixed blessing. The center allows more clients to enjoy their days in a loving teaching environment. Here, participants have access to social and recreational activities to enrich their lives while receiving the support they need to remain safe and healthy. But they need support to help pay off the mortgage for that new building. And they're asking people to donate. They're having a please don't come party. And instead of coming to a party and getting all ready and having a boring meal, you don't have to come. You could just donate to PISNY. And the address is Panhandle Special Needs Incorporated, 1424 North Boyer Avenue, Sandpoint, 83864, and 208-263-7022. You can call them and ask them about this, and they'll tell you what a great help your financial support will be.
A please don't come party.
Right.
Thank you for not attending. I think that's what I saw in there.
Yep. Thank you for not attending. No long evening obligation, no mediocre dinner, no boring presentation.
Well.
Just donate to their cause. Just and it's donate. An excellent cause. It fits right in with NAMI and psychologists and so forth.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jack.
Well, thank you, Diane. There is a full events calendar. Go to Sandpoint Online. They usually provide our events calendar, but we are just about plumb out of time. It's 8:59 on Thursday morning. Another event coming up next weekend. We've got the NAMI Far North event on Friday night and the Bill Percy book signing at Vanderford's on Saturday morning.
And
the big event, of course, is the Panhandle Community Radio membership drive, which is going on in downtown Sandpoint, right down the street at what used to be the Coldwater Creek, the flagship store, right there on First Avenue on the ground floor in the burned building. It's now the burned building, and upstairs will be the burned barrel at that time.
I think new wine bar.
They're just opening up that. They will be opening up that weekend, is what I hear. So,
and we'll have telephones for people to call in and live music, drawings.
It's going to be
come one, come all.
Quite an event that you can come and actually attend in person or just turn on your radio because, we will have live music going on all day long. And it'll be live radio. Those mics will be hot. Anything could happen.
Anything.
Yeah. It'll be a good show.
And call in your pledges, please.
Yes, we do. It is all in support of a good cause, but we don't. We're not gonna do a lot of pitching to you. We're gonna be mostly just trying to have a good time, a fun time on the radio. But as a reminder,
but if you feel like calling, the number will be 265-2992.
That's right, and you can pledge your support to KRFY. We very much need it.
You can donate online too.
This is true.
Yes,
KRFY.org. Thank you, Bill, for coming in this morning.
It was fun. Thank you very much.
You're listening.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You're listening to 88.5 KRFY Panhandle Community Radio, broadcasting out of Ponderay, Idaho, with the studio in downtown Sandpoint. Stay tuned for Bird Note and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long. Robins are very choosy nesters, according to Bird Note. Stay tuned.